We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Joining us right now, the former GM of the New York Mets. He's now a big radio star, and that's Steve Phillips. Steve, Joe, and Evan, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Good to be with you.
You can hear him on Sirius XM, the leadoff spot, and Joe's right. He's big-time radio star now. I'll start off
I guess
with
you
this.
Don't want the GM job again, right?
No, thanks.
No, I understand.
A little bit less stressful.
We get it.
Just talking about baseball.
There you go.
Let me ask you this, Steve, all right? Because you've been there. You know the deal here. Of the three candidates who could not be any more different, we got the freaking super agent. I mean, it makes sense of that one. We've got the veteran who's been around, Doug Belvin, and we've got the new young upcomer and Hiram Bloom. If you are the decider, to borrow a line from former President Bush 33, if you are the decider, who are you deciding on, Steve Phillips?
Boy, it's tough. I got to tell you, you're right. They're three very different guys. I've never really been a fan of agents becoming general managers. I don't see the connection there. It's not the same negotiating a contract and representing players as it is developing players and putting together an organization, a scouting department, everything else. So I don't see that sort of connection. Now, Rick Hahn's doing a nice job in Chicago with the White Sox. So maybe you can look at that and think there's some success there. You know, Jerry Hunsaker back in the day, you know, represented Glenn Davis, but that was really the only player he was representing at the time. And we've seen some general managers going to be an agents, but it's not always worked the other direction. So I don't really have a lot to go on with regard to Brody Von Wagner. Now, this is a very respected, reputable guy, and CAA is a great firm, but the relationship there is such that I think it's probably more about the relationship than it is about really being able to say it fits from an experience perspective. Doug Melvin's a very respected executive. He's, you know, you would think that he'd come from more of the old school, although Doug's a bright guy. He's always been one of the smarter guys, always been one of the more outspoken guys at general managers meetings. And I think that he will embrace some analytics. You know, Chaim Bloom, you know, the Rays are, you know, an analytical sort of a team. Now, you know, my sort of understanding of his role there at one point was he was sort of making the decisions, then they moved him out and Eric Neander kind of came in to make some of those decisions. So I don't know. It's interesting to see how that shakes out. My gut would tell me Doug Melvin, quite honestly, just because I trust him and I think he's more predictable than the others. If not him, then I think Bloom probably makes the next most sense, and then Van Wagenen after that. But just because they're in baseball, the top two guys, if you want just completely new analytics and new way of thinking, then Bloom probably makes sense. If you want a blend of the two, then I think that Doug Melvin probably makes the most sense. So for me, I would probably go in the order of Melvin, Bloom, and then Van Wagenen.
Here's the problem, though, Steve. The problem is the owner. I mean, let's be honest, because he's really the general manager of the team. I mean, it's the general manager of his team is Jeff Wilpon. And that's why basically anybody that's any good doesn't want to work for them. I mean, isn't really that the issue we're talking about here with this franchise?
Well, look, Doug Melvin's a pretty respected guy. He's been around the block a few times. The fact that he's interested, I think, gives some level of credibility to the position. I don't look at Jeff as the general manager. I think that you know, to understand in every organization, and you know, I've talked to guys interviewing for managers' jobs and that are parts of organizations, and you know, the in Cincinnati, ownership is really involved, and there are certain players that they will not let the general manager trade. There are certain guys they like. And so I think every organization, the owner has some level of input and control. Some of it is direct and overt. Some of it is a little bit more latent and tacit in the way that it goes about it. So I'll give you an example, is that you could be having a conversation with an owner and you know, in a meeting. You can sit in a meeting and the owner can say, you know, why would you want that guy? You know, that guy can't play. Now, he didn't say don't go get him, but you kind of understand right now that if you do, it's kind of enter at your own risk, right? Buyer beware. Or you can say, the owner can say, you know, what, this guy's, he's just not getting the job done. I don't think he's going to figure it out. And at that point, you might be in a position where one of your assistants will say to you, do you hear the man? And you're in a position where you think, okay, he didn't tell me to trade him, but I kind of feel like I better trade him because he doesn't like the guy. And every general manager on every team goes through this sort of calculation in their mind about, all right, what does this mean? What should I do? And I don't think the Mets are different than other ownership groups, that they have opinions on players, but I don't think they direct their executives to do this and do that. I think it's more subtle than that.
How was it when you were there?
Probably more as I described it, mm-hmm. The one thing that they never, like Fred never said, get this guy or don't get that guy. He had some strong opinions about players and I'm not dumb. You know, I know. I mean, I heard what he said, and there were times when my assistants would say to me, Steve, did you hear him? And I said, yeah. I said, but, you know, he goes, Steve, did you hear him? This is one, you better hear what he's saying. He's not telling you this. So they have opinions about players. And what a general manager has to do, he has to have the strength and the courage to be able to say no to an owner. Or I don't agree with that. This is what we're going to do, and have the strength of your convictions that you've got the people around you, that you've got, you know, some reason to explain your position on it. But you also know there are times where you feel like, as a general manager, boy, I better be right on this one, because if not, I may be risking my job. And there's times when you get caught in between. Now, when you're earlier in your contract, it's easier to have the strength of your convictions. When you're later in your contract, if things aren't quite going right, and you think, you know, well, I don't know what's going to happen here, you kind of give in a little bit. And it's a tough spot to be in sometimes to be able to do that. But I think the Mets are like every other organization in that regard.
Well, let me ask you this, because just reading the tea leaves over the last few weeks and few months about this, it seems as if Fred Wilpon has one philosophy, Jeff Wilpon has another philosophy, and maybe a big part of this job is weaving between the two, because essentially they're both owners. They're both making decisions, and if they disagree, that kind of puts you in a tough spot, right? If you're the general manager, what side am I on? Is that a part of the job, Steve, having to kind of weave between the two sides of Jeff and Fred?
Yeah, I think that there's no question. Now, I was general manager when it was Mr. Doubleday and Mr. Wilpon.
Right.
And, you know, 50-50 owners who really had completely different philosophies on business and the team and everything else. And so, you know, and that was a tough navigation, right? As a general manager, you spend as much time and energy managing up as you do managing down. And, you know, when the team sold when Fred bought out Nelson Doubleday, I thought that it might, you know, make it a more direct report, but Jeff did get involved and it was, you know, it was an update to Jeff and an update to Fred. They were two separate entities. It wasn't just one, and they didn't always agree. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I kind of think that it's a good thing that there are different opinions. That you do have to, you get challenged in your thinking that, you know, as a general manager, you want to be able to consider every angle that's out there. Now, ultimately, there has to be one decision maker. And I think typically what Fred, my experience was, Fred and Jeff both made it collaborative where they would get as much information involved and then, you know, be part of a decision. But it wasn't one overruling the other, and it wasn't one offended or resentful of the other. But, you know, they did still have very different styles and perspectives on how to go about doing things. And so where, you know, it became one ownership under the Wilpons, there still was two different opinions that and two different reportings that you had to do as the general manager. So it didn't really change my life a lot. As general manager, because they were, you know, although same name, you know, two different guys.
Mm. about the state of the team right now overall. What do you think? How far away do you think they are? Do you think they could contend this year? I mean, it would be nice if they would sign, like, spend money and sign, like, maybe Manny Machado, but we know that's never happening, unfortunately. How about that? I mean, how about where the state of the team is right now going into next year?
Yeah, I think they're right in the middle. They're stuck. And it's the worst place to be. You know, we've talked a little bit about this before. I think you could see that with the right moves and the right investments, that they've got a short window to try to go for it and win. And if they want to lock up some of the young guys for the longer term, that maybe they could extend it beyond that a little bit. But it's going to take dollars and long-term commitment and investment. Or you have to trade to bring in some talent that you're young and controllable, and they don't really have the farm system to do it. So you look at it and think, okay, well, if you're stuck in the middle and you've got two choices, you tear it down and you completely rebuild, or you invest and go for it and win. And what you do is you spend beyond your comfort level.
Amen.
Make
yes.
the right decision.
Hello.
And then you play catch up with your business plan to catch up to where
you
spend
want to be the GM?
More than you should.
You sure don't want to be the GM? Because that's exactly right. That's exactly what they should be doing, Steve. You should be in there screaming at them.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, I think,
open
look,
up the vault.
Not hard. Yeah, look, here's the thing is that you know, I look at the Mets job in interviewing for that job, and I look at the Giants job out in San Francisco, and they're kind of in the same place. Got some older players. I think the Mets are in a better position than the Giants are. But, you know, the Giants have a business plan where they're selling out. They don't really want to take it apart, but if you're interviewing for the job, you got to go in there and say, listen, we got to trade everybody, including Bumgarner, rebuild. We don't have a farm system. We got to tear it down. But that's not what they want to hear. What they want to hear is find a way to make it work with these older guys we have, because we still want to keep drawing full, you know, fill every seat in the stadium, and it's not realistic. And so what do you do in an interview? And I think with the Mets, it's a tough one, because I think the answer is clear. They are clearly in the middle. They need investments to be able to get over the top, and it's going to cost money because they don't have the depth of the farm system to make the kind of trades that they need, then they really need to spend. And if you do that, it's going to go beyond what the projections where they put their business plan together. And look, it's a reasonable way to do a business plan is project revenues and income, work backwards from that on what your expenses can be, and that would guide you on what your major league payroll will be. But I don't know that that is going to give them enough room to make the moves they need to truly compete.
You know,
so they're going to have to go beyond that number, take a bit of a risk. If it works, great. You're going to draw enough, win enough to be able to catch up to that number. If you lose, you have to give yourself an exit strategy to start to trade and get rid of some of those guys and go in another direction. So it's one of the tougher spots to be in, I think, is where the Mets are right now.
Well, I mean, at first I'd sign Manny Machado. I'd start there.
Amen.
But tell me if you agree with this, because this postseason, and this relates to the Mets, this postseason has been about starting pitchers and guys like Clayton Kershaw being a part of it last night, not going deep in games, this reliance on bullpens, teams bullpenning from the beginning. And I look at the Mets and I say, they're the exception. I mean, they got a guy in Jacob DeGrom who's a legitimate ace. And unlike some in this postseason, Jacob DeGrom doesn't wilt in October. We saw him gut out a game 5 against the Dodgers. We saw Noah Syndergaard have some really good postseason performances, whether it's going toe-to-toe with Mad Bum in the wild card game or the way he pitched in the World Series. So I look at the Mets as being the exception in this era we live in, and I think that's an advantage. Do you think it's an advantage to have this kind of starting pitching in a world in which even aces aren't going deep into games?
Well, I would say yes, but the Astros had that advantage. Right?
Yeah.
The Astros
and
starting pitching,
yep.
I mean,
You're
look
right.
at their numbers from last year to this year. The Astros were built that way. The way the Mets would like to portray themselves as being 3 or 4 deep with impact starting pitchers and everything else, that's really where the Astros went. Now, I thought that it would give the Astros an advantage, but you do have to go out and play the games and you have to get things done. They were dinged up a little bit.
Hold on. The Astros won, 103 games? I know they lost in the league championship series, but they won 103. You're talking like the Astros won 70 games, Steve.
I mean, come on. In the World Series. I thought you were talking to the series. So, 62 games, I want to throw the most quality innings that I can. And if I have horses to throw those innings, as opposed to middle relievers to throw those innings, I'm in a better position. So absolutely, the Mets have an advantage in that area. But it cannot be at the expense of a qualified, certified bullpen that can support them. It can't be, well, listen, we've got great starters, so we can save on the bullpen. The bullpen's still important, even for the teams with the great starters.
No, well,
and that's going to be the area. Well, but you know, because what sometimes happens is, you know, we think, all right, we're strong enough here, we can go a little weaker here. We look for ways that we can kind of go, you know, short sell the certain area. And, you know, the Mets really need to fortify that bullpen in a significant way right now. No closer. And I don't, you know, set up guys, maybe. I don't look at Gesellman as my closer in a playoff first division championship team.
No.
They've got to address that role. And I think that quite honestly, I think they need probably a couple of other relievers out in that bullpen. Swarzak was disappointing. You know, they've got some work to do to still put it together, and it can't be just a reliance on that starting rotation.
Mm.
So who do you think they end up hiring? You said
think Melvin. He said Melvin.
No, that's who he would hire.
Okay.
I'm saying, who do you think they will hire? Do you think they will hire Melvin?
I don't. I think it's my gut will tell me that it'll be Bloom.
Interesting.
Yeah, that they're going to go more along the analytics line, and they'll surround him. You know, one of the things that you know Fred wanted, and certainly when I took over the job, I was young, right? I was a young guy getting that job, and you know he wanted me to have gray hair around me. Now my hair turned gray doing the job, but he wanted me to have, you know, he wanted me to have some veteran guys around me. And so I suspect that will be the way that they will fortify this, you know, and get a little bit of Fred and a little bit of Jeff in the process. Now, if they go with Melvin, then they're going to really further invest in their analytics department so that they aren't just old school, but that, you know, that Jeff's sort of new wanting the analytics will go in that direction. I think if it goes Van Wagenen, it's he needs both then, I think. He's going to need both the baseball guys around him and the sort of analytics guys around him. Certainly agents are getting into analytics, as, you know, not nearly as much as teams, but still quite a bit. And they have their own analytics departments. But I think that it just seems to me that it's cleaner between Melvin and Bloom than it is going to the agent side of it.
Hmm. Steve, it's always a pleasure, man. And I'm telling you right now, you should be – you. I love your model of how you got the Mets should approach this
Manny
year.
Manny Machado.
There you go. Manny Machado.
He would be, a great start.
Oh, you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, Steve, here's what I'm hoping for.
Oh, boy.
Every team in baseball is afraid of Manny. He's this, right. He's that.
Here's what we want, Steve. We want to have the option as Met fans to scream at him for not hustling.
That's right.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean,
yeah.
Steve?
We'll even get
t-shirts made. Manny, you're not hustling, but we love it.
Johnny Hustle.
Guys, here's the thing. And, you know, and I've thought of, and look, I went through this as general manager. We used to have this psychological exam that we would give to amateurs and players and everything else. And we came away with a lot of really nice kids, but they couldn't play.
Right. Yeah,
when I came in, I said, listen, talent wins. Tell me about the character and makeup so I know how to manage them once I get them, but give me the talent.
Amen.
I mean, that's really where you have to go, and then figure out how to make it work from there.
Amen. Thank you,
Indeed.
Steve. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, guys, you got it.
Steve Phillips does a great job, SiriusXM, the leadoff spot. In this political climate, political season, I want to run negative campaign ads against Manny Machado. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that.
Yeah, nobody
they're all not real.
And the Yankees don't want him. The Dodgers don't. Nobody wants him. They don't want him.
Why would you want him, Joe?
Let's get that price down.
Listen, Manny. Manny doesn't hustle. Manny throws his bat.
He's a bad guy. He steps on guys' feet going to first base. Come on.
You don't want him, man.
We want this guy.
Horrible human being. He doesn't tip waitresses and waiters.
There you go.
You
Amen.
That one?
Oh, man.
This is paid for by the New York Mets.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.